Díaz Parques. Díaz Parques.
Welcome to the Us Podcast.
What's up?
A podcast about us.
It's for all of us, bro.
For us, by us.
That's right.
Who is us? Hi, hello.
Who came up with the name, I think, is a good question to start
with. Well, let's talk about who came up with the name by introducing the person that came up with the name. What's your name, bro?
My name is... thank you for that, by the way. Good segue. My name is Chris. We're friends.
Chris what?
Chris Carmona. I know. You know what's funny? At this stage of my life, my name is a punchline. Do you remember? Do you remember when we were doing those videos for Sino de Escuache, and then like it was like a breakup scene that they were doing, and then it was like you're dating this person. How could you? But it was like a different name. Yeah. And then remember for I think Moises' movie, it was like. Really? Chris Carmona? That asshole? I'm like, oh my god, this is my name is a punchline now. I agree.
Chris Carmona's name is a punchline. Hi, everybody. My name's Angel Salinas. We are both from the city of Bell, California.
That's right, Bell, California.
Southeast Los Angeles.
Yep.
And we pretty much wanted to start this podcast because we felt that there was a market and we want to, like, get a lot of money and hopefully just make it big and get a lot of money and be real rich and never have to do real work ever again.
That's never the best reason to do it. That's honestly when I started my first podcast, the Carmona Complex, that was kind of like my intent with that. But that's not what we're doing here. For this one, we Angel texted me just randomly. Actually, I had pitched the idea to a podcast like a few months ago, like last year.
Really?
I did. When we were at Home Depot, I helped you buy some lights for your shirt. And I said, hey, I was thinking about doing a podcast with you. And you're like, oh, yeah.
I was like,
But then Angel texts me. He's like, hey, I feel like there's too many white people talking about movies. Too many white guys talking about
too
podcasts.
Too many white people talking about movies. Too many white people in general.
Genocide.
No. Oh no.
What a way to open the podcast.
Oh great. No, none of us are doing this for money. Right now we're sitting in Chris Carmona's room.
Yep.
And the fan is off, but the window's open, but it's still very hot and very sweaty.
Yep.
But I think I texted Chris the idea because of I felt that there was a lack of like pretty much just brown folks talking about movies, talking about pop culture in general. But here, let me tell you guys a little bit about this. So me and Chris are both filmmakers from Southeast LA.
Yep.
Like we talked about. And
Southeast LA, for those people who don't know, it's like LA's best kept secret. It's a little area on the outskirts of LA that's just like predominantly Mexican. I think lately like Middle Eastern too.
Yeah, and a lot of Mexican people, a lot of Middle Eastern people.
It's Bell, Cudahy, Maywood, Huntington Park, Southgate, Linwood.
Yep. It's a bunch of cities that you probably have never heard of before.
Yeah, exactly. But for people who are probably like our core audience who like begins to listen, I'm sure they're from Southeast LA.
Yeah,
so that's kind of why we wanted to make this podcast, because I've tried before and they were always for like shitty reasons, but I think this time I was telling you the other day, when I make the movies that I've been making or the projects I'm doing, like I'm trying to keep it predominantly in Southeast LA. Mm-hmm. And that's because, like I explained to you, I didn't know we had a name. I just thought we were Bell Cutting. I thought we were East LA for the longest time. So when people say like, where are you from? I'm like, oh, from East LA. Like, oh, like South Central. I'm like, no, like Bell. Like, do you know where that is? Like it's near Downey. It's near Downey. Like yeah. that's the go-to. Like, oh, I know where that is. So when I found out that we had a name, I decided when someone explained to me that Cella, Southeast LA was our name, for some reason that kind of ignited something in me that was just like, fuck, like, okay, so we have like a name, like we have something to go off of. So like that for me kind of gave me like a purpose, like try to do more things creatively here and keep it, at least keep. Get the momentum going in the Southeast, because there's so many of us. There's so many of us that, like, are out there.
I think so, too. I went to Bell High School.
Yeah.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Maywood.
Maywood High School.
Yeah.
In Bell High School, at least in my experience, I've met a ton of talented dudes and talented women as well. Talented folk in general.
Yeah.
And I always felt that Bell produced a lot of really talented people.
Yeah.
But so why weren't more of us in the Southeast LA area like going anywhere and doing anything? I mean, I attributed it to like the early, you know, the early adoption of like alcohol abuse, drug abuse.
That's interesting.
Because that's what I saw. That's what I saw dragging my homies down, like drinking a lot, doing drugs, just doing shit that they're not supposed to do. And then, like, I just feel like something happens that forces them to stay in the city, whether that be, like...
It's so funny you say... Yeah, it's so funny you say that because, like, I was never around that much drug use, at least in high school. Like, I mean, like, I saw, like... I don't even consider weed a drug anymore, but, like, I saw, like, a lot of that, like, potheads and stuff and, like, drinking, too. But to me, it was never substances that stop people from wanting to achieve their goals. It was just life in general. Mm-hmm. Like... I had a friend who, if he's listening to this again, I'll talk about him. And I don't mean this in a bad way. You're living your best life. That's fine. You know, enjoy. But I had a friend who loved to play the piano. Here he knows who he is. He loved to play the piano. And
every one of our friends and family get ready to get burned.
I know. Everyone's going to get burned. No, but he loved to play piano. And I, you know, I understand, like, his situation. So, like, you know, for me, the thing about me and the thing I want people to understand, like, a big misconception about me is that, like, I'm this, like, spoiled... like rich kid, you know, that kind of got everything handed to them, which is not really the case. The only thing I can really like admit to is that like I've been lucky enough to be a part of a family that like made enough to where I basically can be comfortable and go live my own dream. I understand now that it's not like that for so many people, for other people. So like if there was a kid like me who was fucking dirt poor with my same passion, my same drive, but just didn't have, you know, the means to make a video or even fucking do a podcast, like he's just gonna be like, well, I gotta work for it, you know. Or if he has my drive,
that was me,
right? If he has my drive, he would go and work for it and, you know, like make money to buy these things. Or, you know, what most people do is give up. And why I brought up my friend who plays piano is he gave up on that. Like, he used to be so good. He would say that he's not, but he used to be so good. And I thought he was going to be a musician, or at least a music teacher or something in music. But I remember even from, like, the earliest of, like, 8th grade or 9th grade, like, he just kind of started thinking, like, you know, realistically. And he told me, he's like, I remember he said, like, hey, man, so are you going to play piano? He's like, no. He's like, I'm just going to kind of, like, go to school and just, like, become, like, a teacher's assistant or something. But what about piano? He's like, it's not really something I can make a career out of. I'm like, yes, you can. Like, yes, you can. Don't give up on it. He's like, yeah. He's like, I have to. He's like, you know, like, that doesn't make any money. That's the first time I ever heard that. Like, doesn't make any money. I'm like, what does that matter? But I understand that more now, but like to me, like that's what I saw. Just like people's personal situation that didn't allow them it's a real privilege to be comfortable to do what they want. Because I live with my dad. I live with my dad, and you know, I have to admit, he got me a computer. He got me, you know, I bought my first camera and everything. But like basically, wow. Like he lives. Yeah, no, like he he lets me like live here for free.
Yeah,
and. During that time, like the best way I could repay him is like by fucking making shit happen. So thankfully, and these are, I'm proud to say that these are kind of like my own accomplishments, doing the Oscars, making my movie Bad Labor, and then now doing this thing with the series with Me Too. I feel like it's a cool thing, you know, to like flex on Instagram or whatever, like, hey, look what I'm doing. But to me, it means more to like bring my dad onto set to see like, hey man, like this is what you. Because of you graciously allowed me to stay, like, this is what I got to create. So it's really a big thank to you.
Dude, for sure. I feel like it's good that you brought that up because I feel like I fall on the other side of the spectrum, I guess. Like, it's cool that we can get two different perspectives on, like, I guess the creative path. I'm the youngest of three siblings, and so I've always felt like my mom has kind of, like, given up on not given up on raising me, but just given up on like really guiding me towards life. She kind of just let me do whatever I wanted, and that was, I guess, both a blessing and a curse, depending on how you want to take it. But so when growing up, like my brother, oldest brother, he's the first kid. He got most of the discipline. Then the middle sister, she didn't get very much discipline because she's the only girl of the family. So she was always the favorite. And then it was me. And so I was kind of let to do whatever I wanted, honestly. Like, I was allowed to do whatever I wanted, but I was never encouraged to do it, if that makes sense. Like, as an example.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
Like, as an example. It's
like, go ahead and do it, but they're not going to, like, be behind you when you want to, like, pursue it for real.
So it's like, I wanted to do film, right? And then she always was like, what? She never stopped me, but she was always just like, what are you going to do with that? Like, when are you going to stop, like, pretending and get a real job or whatever?
Yeah.
And so, like, I remember, we'll talk more about, like, our past and how we got to this point specifically, but I remember getting accepted to this program that was going to allow me to like, go to Mexico and shoot a short film and stuff like that. And I was
this
like...
This was the Me Too program?
Yeah, this was the Me Too program.
Okay.
And I remember the day I told her, I was like, Mom, I got accepted. It's going to be 5 weeks. It's going to be super cool. And then the first thing she told me, she was just like, why are you going to do that? You're going to miss school. You're going to miss work. You're going to go to someplace dangerous. Like, oh, man. I remember, I don't know if it was this or another thing I got accepted to, but I remember she told me, she was like, I was hoping you wouldn't get accepted because I didn't want you to do that. And I was like, wow, that's just crazy. But she never outright stopped me from doing anything. So I definitely know people that have families that do stop them from doing stuff. It's like, no, you're not going to do this because you need to help out the family. You need to go to school, blah, blah, blah. Way more demanding.
That's the second to, like, situational. It's also just that parents are just like, no, we're not going to let you. No, no. What are you doing? It's like, no.
Yeah.
It's weird. Your story. I was going to say it's funny. It's not funny. It's weird. Your story about your mom telling you that. Have you ever read the Disaster Artist book?
No. Only watched the movie.
Greg's mom, like, did that. Like, he went to L.A. and he almost got hooked up with this, like, really big agent. And when she called the house, the mom, because the mom was so, like, against him going to L.A. because she didn't want him to, like, fail, she, like, cussed out the agent. And then she's like, no, you're not going to call my son again, you fucking bitch, whatever. And then he's like, Mom, no. And so when he called it back, the agent's like, don't ever fucking call his office again.
That's
and
it's wild.
Like, yeah.
So. Yeah, so I guess I can say I'm lucky that I never had a parent that outright got in my way.
Right, yeah.
But, so I can't really talk about that, but I can talk about a parent not pushing you towards your goal.
Yeah.
Because there's some people that are like, you know, my mom and dad or whatever have always been there every step of the way. I don't know how that feels like, but
yeah,
we all have our own...
Well, see, I didn't know that. I didn't know that about you. And that to me, I think, can make an interesting contrast to... See, the thing is I think why... Now it's starting to make a little more sense, kind of like why I get to be the way I am and why people aren't. It's because my parents, it's weird, my parents were both supportive. My dad particularly was not. Like, he lets me live here, right? But, like, it's funny, he'll let me do things, but then he'll shit on me at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's so weird. I mean, I love him. He lets me live here and everything, and it's great. But, like, a lot of times, like, when I was growing up and doing, like, my videos, he'd be like, Chris, why are you doing your stupid videos? And then he would, like, fund it still. Like,
great dad.
Yeah. He's like, why are you doing your stupid videos? And, like, he would buy me these big-ass cameras. He'd buy me my first Apple computer. And he'd buy me all these things. But, like, so technically he was supporting me. But, like, he'd be like, stop doing your stupid videos and do your homework. And it's like, well, and the thing, though, I was actually talking about this with my brother the other day. I think the reason why we get to be the way we are, like, me and him, and why we get to pursue things comfortably, it's mainly because of my mom. Because my mom, she was always just like, she always believed in us. Like, she always knew that we were going to be something. Like, first she thought I was going to be a pastor, and she really tried to push me there.
Really?
Well, because we were hella Christian, right? We will get into this in another episode or something. But but my mom just, I mean, in short, she just, like, she let me believe in the craziest things. Like, when I was a kid, like, she told me, like, she said, you're going to be a famous actor, you're going to do this and that, when I was trying to be a kid actor. And I think it's because of that kind of, like, almost, like, naive belief in me that I developed that belief in myself. And so even as I get older, and even though, like, I'm more realistic about, like, other things, the naive belief that I'm going to be, like, this filmmaker or whatever, like, that always stayed with me. So that kept me going. And even when I was at my lowest, like, I was still progressing because that belief was instilled to me right from the bat, from the jump when I was a kid. So I think, talking to you about this now, like, it is important for parents to be, you know, to tell their kids, like, you know, they have to, it's weird, they have to, I understand what they have to sacrifice too for that. Like, they have to sacrifice real, like, you know, like, maybe my kid isn't good enough for this shit. Yeah, like, I get that, because there are kids out there that, I mean, no shade, but there's some people out there that just aren't cut out for it, like, just can't make, you know, draw, sing, make movies or whatever.
But then there's also a bunch of people that aren't good at making movies, making millions of dollars
there you go.
Off there you those go. Movies. So
there you go.
I think almost, this is kind of going to sound bad, but I think talent is almost irrelevant. It's just like,
yeah,
it's just if you can make it or not, if you have the drive to do it. Because, I mean, I would say maybe 60%, 70% of movies that get made are maybe borderline terrible to passable. And that's, I think that's too high of a ratio, at least for me.
These days, yeah, for sure.
And so, like, someone's giving these people money. Someone's reading their things and saying, hey, this is good to for money. Here, have some money. And so I don't even think it's just like you have to be good at it. I think you just have to do it and have people believe in you and have people support you.
It starts with that belief, though. Yeah. And I think that's why, like, why I think that this podcast and why we call it us, why it's so important, is because we're going to be parents someday.
Yeah.
We're going to be parents someday. Our listeners are going to be, well.
Maybe.
I don't know who that's for. Okay. But, you know, we're going to be parent, or we're going to know kids someday, you know, like, mm-hmm. we'll be teachers, we'll be whatever. It's like, we have to tell them, like, it's possible. I just think that's really important. Like, you know, to let your kids, like, even if, like, let them find it, like, let them fuck up on their own. Like, if they want to, like, be a painter and, like, you're like, there's absolutely no fucking money in painting, just mm-hmm. let them do it. And just, like, let them, if it's something that they're going to succeed in, they will. And if it's something they're going to fall on their flat in their face from, learn from it, and then do something even better, let them do that too. Like, I'm not a parent, but I kind of get where they're coming from there, but I think it's important.
I think you touched on a pretty important topic that a lot of...
Everything we talk about here is important, guys. So important.
I think so too. But I think you touched on a really important part of how it feels like to be a minority creator. And that minority could be whatever minority you want to belong to. But we're mm-hmm. specifically talking about the Latino experience. And so, at least for me, I think a huge thing is the pressure to succeed. And you talk about how your upbringing kind of has influenced you as a creator. And I think I'm starting to realize how my upbringing as well has influenced me as a creator. So I would kind of contrast me and you and our behavior. And I'd be like, why are we so different? Why do we approach things so differently? As an example, I kind of sent, when the inception of this podcast, besides the Home Depot meeting, it was a text message from me. And I was like, hey, Chris, have you ever thought about making a podcast? Maybe. About this or that. Chris responds with, I'm down, bro. When are we doing this? I have the mic. I have everything. Come over next Friday.
You text me that. I'm like, cool. We start Friday.
Yeah, we start Friday. And it was already Friday. So it was like, next week, be ready. We're starting this podcast. So honestly, you're hearing this podcast, and the idea to make it was last week. So
yeah.
It's been 1 week, and that was all because of Chris. Because if it was for me, I'd be like, all right, let's plan this out. Let's write up a schedule, blah, blah, blah. And that's because I definitely feel a pressure to succeed. And that's why I tread carefully in everything I do. I'm constantly shooting ideas with Chris. And we're, as filmmakers, we're always just talking shop about making movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, I always feel like I will do this big project, a feature film, when I feel ready, and I don't feel ready right now. Chris's response is always, just do it. Just go, just do it. And that's been Chris for as long as I've known him. He's just real gung-ho, very, let's get up, let's do it, why wait? And I've been more, hey, let's wait and do it right. And so, even though we're both creatives, we both create differently. And I think we touched on, it's mostly because of the way we were raised.
Yep. I never made that parallel before. I always just thought it was just kind of like who we were as people, but obviously who you are is based on how you grew up. That's wow, dude. Yeah. Look at that.
That's pretty crazy. Wow. Look at that. We discovered something new about each other.
That's fucking, you're watching this live if anyone's watching.
Yeah, so forgive us I don't know.
Dude, we're so
This mature. Is our first episode. Yeah. Bear with us. We're trying to make it as dope as possible. But it's pretty hot in this room.
Is it? You're right next to the window, bro.
It's fine. Real hot in this room.
You are right next to the fucking... Anyway. Let's jump into our topics that we discussed.
Well, one of our main topics. We discussed a little bit, but I think I still want to talk a little bit more about who we are, because I feel like I feel like me and you and the people watching on Instagram Live, shout out to them, they know who we are because they follow us for whatever reason. We're friends. But people, let's say someone in Wyoming or Utah or Nebraska, they don't know who we are.
That's true.
So we are, they know our names. Let's dive into, I want to pretend that I don't know you.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you some questions as if I don't know the answer to them.
All right. And I'll ask you back.
And you'll ask me back. So I'm going to start with, your name is Chris Carmona.
Yeah.
How old are you, bro?
I'm 21.
21 years old.
Yeah.
What's your sign?
I'm a Libra.
A Libra.
Yeah.
I don't believe
it. I was actually going to lie and I was going to say, I don't know my fucking sign. I'm believing that shit. But you know. I do know my sign.
We all know our signs.
I do know my sign.
All right, so.
What's your sign?
My sign's a Leo, but we're not talking about me right now.
Oh, okay, okay. I'll jump then.
August 8th.
I thought we'd get back and forth. But all right.
It's going to be a one-sided and then another side.
Okay, for sure.
Chris Carmona, have you always wanted to be a filmmaker?
Yes. So. I've always knew I wanted to be involved with movies ever since I was five. I was going to say, everybody knows this story, but I'm not that famous yet. it's because I talk about it a lot. When I was 5 years old, my dad took me to go see Spider-Man. And why that was such a special event for me was because I was not allowed to watch it. Because my mom, you know, how Spider-Man does that, like, that thing with his fingers.
The shooting the web move.
So that's the devil sign. It is that, but it, you know, it's also what he does.
Demonio.
Exactly. So my mom thought that it was like, you know, satanic propaganda. And so she didn't want me to go see it. And then my dad was cool enough to pick me up from my Christian school and be like, Chris, don't tell your mom, but we're going to go see Spider-Man. I was like, fuck yeah, Spider-Man.
You went to Christian school?
I went to Christian school from kindergarten to third grade.
Wow. I didn't know this.
Yeah. I went to Christian school. I had a little tie and everything. I'll show you a picture.
That's cute.
Anyway, so we went to go see Spider-Man, and I was just fucking blown away just because of, like... I mean, I had seen movies before. My dad said that he'd always take... It's funny. My dad tells me the story that, like... He always tells me, like, when we'd go to the movies when I was a kid, I'd always be running around up and down the seats, and I would never want to watch it. He could never, like, sit me down. But Spider-Man was the first movie that, like, shut me up and just, like, was like, wow, this is dope. And so...
Did you know who Spider-Man was?
No, I just saw the trailer and I didn't know he was a comic. I didn't know it was a comic book. I just knew that the character Spider, because everybody at school like talked about it because like they weren't allowed to watch it either. So they're like, did you see the trailer for that?
All these little Christian kids.
Exactly. We'd like huddle up in like in this corner and be like, did you watch that Spider? And we had to whisper, Spider Man.
Did you watch the trailer?
We didn't even call it trailer. It was like, did you watch the commercial for Spider Man? anyway, so I saw it, and obviously when you're a kid, the first thing you see on screen are the actors. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I want to be an actor. So when I was growing up, I did that. I did acting, and then I realized, and it's funny, I actually landed a low budget movie. I was in a low budget movie. I was the kid of the lead guy. And
Do you have a copy of that?
I know somebody who does. I will show you. I will post it one day. I've been trying to get a hold of it because they did send me a copy once, but like I lost it. But it exists. It still exists. So it was on that set when I was a little kid actor that was like the biggest thing I ever did. It's a movie called Deal Break. You can't find it anywhere.
But IMDb.
It doesn't even have that.
Find it.
You'll find it. Somebody find it. Anyway, on that set, the kind of where like the director idea came to me was we were doing a scene where I like find a gun and I had to like I find my dad's gun under his bed because he's a gangster, and I have to like, and I put it, I think the scene was that I went to go put it under my mom's bed. I think
a Latino dad and son, and he's a gangster, and you find your dad's gun.
He wasn't a gangster, actually. He was a drug dealer, but like, you know, gangster,
even
whatever.
Better.
Oh yeah, wonder. Yeah, exactly.
How original. when was this movie made?
2005.
And the shit's still going on. 2018. Bro.
Look at that. Yeah.
Nothing's changed.
Well, the point is that on that set, the directors were kind of like, not making fun of him, but they were like, that it was cute that like I was kind of telling them what shots they should get. I'm like, you should, because they didn't, because the you never saw me put the gun under my mom's bed. You never saw that. Like, she just, like, you just see me go home with it and with the gun in my backpack. And then you see the mom, like, the next scene's like, hey, I found the gun on Johnny. That was my name. And so I remember I was like telling him, like, you should get this shot of me doing this and have like a wide angle of me coming, and like they were just like, you're a little director, like, kid.
Kid, do you fucking know who I am?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you fucking get your ass out of here?
And so it was there that, like, people were like, oh, he's a little director, he's a little director. And I was like, I said, I like that director. Like, and I remember, I just, like, I, whenever I'd watch, like, the Oscars and the, like, best director, but I'm like, I like the idea of being a director, but, like, but they're behind camera. I want to be in front of the camera, too.
Can I be a director, but be in front of it?
That idea was foreign to me. Little did I know that that was very common. But anyway, mm-hmm. that's kind of where that's how it started.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I was so engrossed in the story, I completely... What's another question? What the fuck?
Well, let me ask you. Let's take these three to you. How old are you?
I'm 23, going to be 24. Nice. August 8th, I am a Leo.
And why movies?
Well, another way we contrast is our story, I think.
You mean you weren't in a low-budget movie as a son to the lead actor?
I was not the lead Johnny in a low-budget movie when I was a little kid.
Oh, hi, Mom.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mom.
And I did not go to Christian school, although I do remember going to catechism. I think that's the that's the thing you do when you have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, religion. I remember watching Passion of the Christ in school.
I did a remake of that.
Wow. We got to talk about that some other day. But I remember watching The Passion of the Christ for that school stuff, and they showed it like a documentary, you know? Like, they were like, this is what really happened. Look at the pain that Jesus is going through. And this is like, I was sitting there like, this shit looks so real.
It did, dude. It gave me nightmares.
So obviously I was like, I'm not going to question. I was like seventh grade. So I was like, damn, this is some brutal shit. And like, kids in my class were crying. The teacher was crying. I was like, man, this is real. This is real emotional. And so I felt bad. I was like, man, I guess I owe it to Jesus to like finish this class, because that he went through some shit. And so I was like, yeah, I'll go.
I love that they brainwashed you with dude, fucking Passion
of the
Christ. Not
just me, they brainwashed everyone in that class, and every class every year. Like,
wow.
It's scary thinking back to it. It's like showing that movie, and you can't be a little kid and have the ability to be like, man, this is just a movie.
Like, you can't. No,
you do not have that ability. And so,
no. Yeah,
that's just a little segue, but or a little divergence. No, the way I think you have the, I don't want to say typical story, because your story is very unique to you, but you have that unique, you have that sameness to your story that you got inspired at a young age and you've just been driven to it your whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
So, as I mentioned, I'm going to be 24 this year. I don't think I ever thought of making movies until my junior year of high school. So I must have been, I was pretty old, 16. 16 when I first...
That's a dinosaur.
That's a dinosaur in film years.
Yeah.
But I was at a point in my life where I didn't really have any direction and I didn't really have any ambition. I specifically remember not even really wanting to go to college. I was just like, I hate school now. Why would I continue to go to school when it's just an option after that? Like, mandatory anymore, so why the fuck would I go?
Yeah.
And I remember, I think it was 10th grade, and I had to choose elective classes for my 11th grade year. And I specifically remember just not wanting to do anything. Like, I did not care about... I had no passion at that time of the Christ. But I had no passion at that time. And so I honestly just took whatever elective classes I could and hoped for the best. I was like, I'm going to sign on to print shop. I'm going to sign on to Japanese class. Ooh. I'm going to sign on to this shit. And then I'm going to take film class. And then in my film class, I met a teacher by the name of Mr. Roy Lansdowne. Shout out to Mr. Roy Lansdowne.
I always heard about him from Maywood. I was so jealous that we didn't have a fucking film program.
Lansdowne is super cool. he's one of the only white people I cherish, that I keep close to my heart, for
everybody's
sure.
Everybody's welcome.
Yeah, everybody's welcome. But Mr. Lansdowne was the first teacher that kind of not just broke down film for what it can be, but also looked at me and as well as the rest of the class and was like, you can make movies too. It's not this unachievable thing that I'm sure you make it out to be. And I did make it out to be. I was like, how the fuck am I going to make a movie? Like, I remember, I think my favorite movies at that time were like Spy Kids. And I want to see every single Spy
you
Kids
You were 16?
Movie. Yeah. And that was my favorite movie, Spy Kids. You got a fucking problem with that?
No, that was my favorite movie when I was 5.
No, I'm just kidding. I love Spy Kids so much. And my mom hated it. But my mom's a trooper. She took me to every single Spy Kids movie. Wow. Fell asleep in the middle of every single Spy Kids movie.
Wow.
But I saw them all. And it was dope. And I loved it.
Right into the mic, please, next time.
I think at 16, one of my favorite movies must have been either, depending on when I watched it, but it must have been either SLC Punk or Reservoir Dogs.
Nice.
Or I don't think I'd seen Old Boy yet. I might have seen Old Boy already. It was one of those movies. I saw a lot of my, a lot of more mature movies from my older brother. He would just be like, watch this shit. I remember I didn't want to see Reservoir Dogs because I thought it was a skateboarding movie.
What?
Because I thought it was Lords of Dogtown. So I was like, I don't give a fuck about skateboarding. I don't want to watch this.
Now I wish Reservoir Dogs was a fucking skateboarding.
And so he put it on one day, and I was like, fuck it, I'll watch it. I was in the living room anyway, so I was like, whatever. I have nowhere else. I'm 15, no car. Where the fuck am I gonna go? So I just sat there and I watched it and I was like, damn, this movie is hella dope.
Yeah.
And
that was your first Tarantino movie?
No, it was Kill Bill. But okay. I didn't know that was like I didn't know that was Tarantino.
Okay.
But I remember watching Kill Bill at a friend's house and I was like, damn, this shit is dope. And then it went black and white and I was like, can we watch the uncensored version?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't like this black and white stuff. And so fast forward to junior year, I took film class. The first movie we analyzed was The Elephant Man by David Lynch. That shit blew my goddamn mind. We literally went like frame by frame, scene by scene, just dissecting it.
That's dope, man.
And that just blew my mind of like all the stuff I was missing out on in my watching experience. I was like, man, all this shit would have just passed me by if I wasn't watching it the way I was being taught to watch it. Yeah. And so that just, I guess, kind of awoke something in me. And I was like, I want to do this. And then I started writing and directing short films for film class. And they weren't very good, but I enjoyed it. They weren't very good compared to what I liked, but they were better than, I think, everything else that was being made in that high school. If you can remember what high school quality films look like.
Oh, I can remember.
So, yeah. I like to think that I was shooting above the bar. And so I was like, hey, not only do I enjoy doing this, I think I'm pretty good. So I think this is where our paths kind of merge into one, because after high school, we both kind of did the same thing, but just at different times.
Yeah.
I went to a program called Inner City Filmmakers in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
When did you go?
I went 2014.
2 years apart.
Just 2 years apart, yeah.
And there we pretty much learned the exact same things. And
Angel and I didn't meet there, though.
We did not.
I didn't meet you there. I think I had seen you around, but I'd never, I didn't meet you when I was going, like when I was attending a student, as a student.
2014 was like the 1 year that I did not want anything, like anything to do with ICF that year.
Why?
I think I was rebelling for whatever reason. I was just like, no, I'm fucking out of here. And so I just don't really know anyone from that year.
Yeah.
But I've learned a few people. But anyway.
Yeah.
I can't remember when I always heard the name Chris Carmona. Carmona. He'd always be doing this. He'd always been doing that. And I'd be like, hey, can I get some advice? Yeah, you should be a little more like Chris Carmona.
No, nobody said that to you.
I fucking swear.
Nobody said that to you.
They did. I'm not going to name names, but I promise you, there was many moments where I'd be like, can I get some advice? Yeah. Look at what Chris Carmona did. Or read what Chris Carmona did. And I was just like, I don't know who the fuck this Chris Carmona is, but I fucking hate this dude. And I hope to never be his friend ever.
I want to say, too, especially, I hated Angel at one point. Only because, well, for one, actually, my hate for you kind of grew. Or no, it began when I saw your Halloween 48-hour short Moonlight Drive. because I hated that you had such a great voice. You had such like a, it's very like,
that was my acting debut.
It was like, you were like, it's like, I want to say it was kind of like kind of like Jonah Hill. It's got, I don't know, there's just this quality. It's this like quality, and I hated that it was so funny. I hated that you were, I don't know why. It was like, it was a light hate, but it wasn't until I met you, because we were, you and I, we decided to help out ICF when they were recruiting new people for their year.
I remember this vividly.
I think it was 2015 or 2016. 2015 it had to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you were kind of behind the camera, and you were handling like
the interviews
and stuff. And then I stepped in, and I was just like, "Oh no, no, no!" I'm like, "This is not happening. I'm taking over this shit."
This dude was just chilling in the back of the room, and I was handling everything fine. And then this dude, after the interview person leaves, he's like, "Hey, can I handle the next one?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, Chris Carmona. You go ahead and do whatever you want." And this dude sits down. And I don't know how much you remember, but I remember.
I remember everything. Do you remember that girl that almost cried?
Yeah.
And I had to like work. I was so proud of myself.
Do you remember the first question that you asked the person?
No.
You.
I want to ask. I want to hear now. Tell me.
What did you ask?
Oh my God, my audio's peaking. Great.
I think you asked.
Oh, I thought you had it locked and loaded. You got to think about it.
I fucking forgot. Like, you made me forget.
Nah, look at that. You brought down the suspense.
Oops. Fuck, what did you say? You said something dumb. That's all I know. I know you said something dumb. Well, now
we'll never know.
You said something about animals.
What?
You said...
Do you like to fuck animals?
No. That might have been better. But no, straight up, Chris just said a dumbass question. It was like an icebreaker question.
Oh, okay. I don't remember the question, but I like to open with icebreakers.
Yeah, it was like an icebreaker. It was a question that you weren't supposed to take seriously, and I was just taking it back. I was like, what the fuck? This is some fucking serious interviews, bro. Don't be fucking making a joke out of this shit. Chris is just chilling in his chair, just like relaxing, being like, whatever, I got this, bro. And then
I sound so smug.
And then the interview person, I think we started asking more personal questions. And then
the interviewee, you mean?
Interviewee.
Yeah, yeah.
We started asking more. No, it wasn't even personal questions. She was just so nervous.
Yeah, she was very nervous. That she
broke down crying.
Oh my God. Let's paint the scene. It's me. I'm a big guy.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in this like fucking towering director's chair. Mm-hmm. There's a camera in her face. There's lights on her. There's like other people in the room just kind of watching her. And I could just tell that she had... I felt her vibe as soon as she walked in. She was just like nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I think she had like a speech impediment,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And she was very like timid. And so when I was, I just remember she started crying. And then like everybody, I remember, because Sonny and Jose were there, they remember this too. Those are my guys, my genius boys. Shout out, guys. And everybody just got quiet because this girl's crying. And I just remember I was like, fuck. I'm like, what do I do? And so I said, hey, if I'm wrong, correct me. But I just remember I was like, hey, it's okay. I said, like, we don't have to talk about that.
Specifically, Chris, like, jumped out of his chair. And he was like, hey, it's okay. And I was just like, look what the fuck you did, Chris, you jackass, making people cry.
I remember the move I did that helped was I said, let's turn off the camera. So let's turn off the camera.
Mm-hmm, and I remember that.
I turned off the camera. I said, cameras are off. I'm like, hey, like, forget this. Fuck this interview. I'm like, whatever. I'm like, let's just talk. Just you and me. I'm like, is that cool with you? I'm like, do you still want to do this? You can leave if you want. She's like, no. I think she's like, I want to finish. And so I said, all right. I said, so let's just talk, you and me. And I don't remember what we talked, because I was so scared, because I'm like, I don't want this girl to cry.
Yeah,
so we kind of were just talking. And then we sort of somehow like got her to just like get back on track and talk about herself and like her personal life. And then I was just like, I just remember like sneaking my finger over to the record button. I was like, beep.
Really?
And I let the camera like finish, like record the rest of her. Cause she was looking more lively. So I'm like, I want them to see this.
Yeah. You know? Cause we had to like make her laugh and stuff.
Yeah. And so we finished the interview, and this is going to add some like the picture of smugness that everyone's getting already of me. Mm-hmm. So she leaves. And then I just remember everybody turned. I just remember I felt so dope that like, because she left with like a smile and she was like excited, and so she left, and I just remember sitting in the chair and I was just like, look back at everybody. And I think Jose told me, he's like, wow, Chris, he's like, you handled that really well. And I was like, thank you, thank you. And then everybody's kind of like applauded. I don't know if they applauded me, but they was like, it was like
this dude.
It was like, what I don't remember an applause. I just remember.
I think like the red carpet got rolled out or something. Like
people were snapping photos.
Someone had like confetti, I think, and then they threw it. I don't know. I think I'm remembering it wrong.
It wasn't applause. It was just like I got like people were like praising me a little bit. We're like, wow, like Chris, like great job, like that was really cool, like that. And I was like, I know. And then Angel just I don't think you said anything to me. You just walked out of the room.
I think so, too. I was probably like, I think I went to go complain. I was like, this fucking dude is taking over my fucking interviews. Like, what the fuck?
I know, because Angel, to be fair, Angel was supposed to be.
That was my job.
I know. And I just sat there. And
I had fucking
questions. You know why? Questions like, I remember. Because I'm like, because you were just asking such like generic. This is mm-hmm. the mindset of old me. You're asking like, what about this? What's your favorite? I'm like, I said, let's make this like interesting. Let's. And so I remember I was waiting for a moment. Like,
I remember what you asked. You asked, what's your favorite animal cracker?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" This is what you took my.
I think I could even feel you. Like, you didn't say it out loud, but I think like I could just sense you. Like, are you serious? I felt it.
Aura.
I felt it, dude. And yeah, no, I just remember I thought like, oh, these are boring questions. I said I want to make it fun. Like, I don't know why it wasn't important to me for these interviews to be interesting, but I was in such like a controlling like what can I fix? What can I handle?
Keyword. Controlling.
Yeah, exactly. I think I was just because I was hot off the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was because I thought I was like the fucking baddest.
They're like, look at me, I'm fucking walking into these. I'm walking into this
Chris
room.
Chris Carmona is in the building.
You know who the fuck I am? My name is the Chris Carmona. I don't know if you have checked out my Instagram lately.
That's my handle.
Yeah.
No, but that's where that came from. That I think that's why I was being a little. But I remember it was from that day. That I'm like, this fucking guy. Because I just remember
we both left that day being like. This motherfucker.
Yeah, because I remember you even either you told on me or you just said, "Hey man, like, can I like get off?" You basically told me like to fuck off, and so I was just like, "Whatever."
I do remember that.
Yeah, and then I just got like this nasty vibe.
I was like, "I'm taking over."
Yeah.
And so we.
Yeah. You just walked in, you said, "Hey, I'm taking over, man," and then I was like, "What?" I don't remember if I fought you on it, but I was like, "Whatever." And so I got up, and then I left.
Yeah, I think you just let me do it.
Yeah,
you're like. Man, whatever.
I'm like, I made a girl not cry. Fuck you.
Look, bro, one of us was at the Oscars. I'll give you a clue who it was. So that's who I thought Chris was. Just this fucking stuck up dude.
Yeah, yeah.
That just always had to like be the center of attention. And I was like, this motherfucker. And then Chris thought I was, I don't know what the fuck you thought I was.
I just thought that you were just like, I think I thought you were stuck up too, but just you didn't have like shit to back it up. I think that's what I thought it was. But that's my complaint for everybody is that like I always think, even to this day I'll admit, like it's very mild, but I always think like that I don't like are like they're stuck up, because some of them are, but like they don't have the shit to back it up. But I think that's what it was, that I thought like that you just thought like you were so funny.
Yeah, and that was the case for a long time, I think. I think we've talked about how I think we both fall into these toxic mindsets of being jealous of people for creating, and we talk shit about them, and we talk them down.
Yeah.
And then we take a step back and like, well, what have you done? Like, what have we done as creatives? Usually it's nothing. And that's why that gets us even angrier. It's like, I'm so much better than you, but I don't really have anything to prove that. But I mean, I have a couple scripts written and I think they're pretty funny, and I'm just having trouble making it's all these excuses.
I hate that's even a thing. I hate that I allowed myself to be a part of that, to be a part of like that competitive. It's just because it's like that, it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help you to hate. I mean, it's all right to dislike people. You don't have to like everybody, but I think to just like actively hate someone, I mean, not that like I thought about you every day, but it was just like
Are you sure?
Fucking Angel. No, but like whenever I'd see you, I'd just be like, ugh, like, oh my god, this fucking guy, Angel. And it wasn't until we did the that little film group that I kind of like got to see. I'm like, hey, this guy's actually pretty cool. Like, he's pretty dope.
I always knew Chris would be a part of my, I guess, filmmaking life, because we both come from the same city. We're both directors. We're both filmmakers. Yeah. And so I was like, whether I like it or not, we're going to be round up together eventually. And that happened once. We were both a part of this film collective in our area. And that's when we realized we're not so different, you and I.
We're not.
And that was really cool.
We were both hated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of drama that we're definitely not going to get into. But just know that me and Chris were just two too wild. And
as I sit here and look at you, as you were talking, I was just like, Chris, like, did you ever imagine that you'd be sitting in your room doing a podcast with Angel Cillian?
Yeah, this is wild. Like,
I can't believe that. I mean, like, we've been friends for a long time, but like,
thinking back to how negatively we viewed each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To think that someone will come and be like, one day you're gonna be sitting in Chris's room, fucking making a podcast, and you're gonna be having so much fun. Oh,
look at that.
And now look at us. Now we're fucking here. But pretty much, let's speed through the rest of this catch up.
That's just a little bit about us. But obviously as the episodes kind of continue, we're just going to kind of dive more.
Yeah, you'll learn some dope shit that we've done.
Here's the thing. Let me explain my personal agenda with this. Angel and I, straight up, we're going to be big. We're gonna fucking make movies, and we're gonna inspire a whole generation of kids.
An entire generation.
And what I wanted this to be, because Angel sort of pitched it as like, oh, let's do a thing, you know, like those typical podcasts where people are like, hey, what's going on in the movies this week? Oh, today I saw Black Panther and it was amazing because it's so perfect. It's like none of that. I was like, you know what? Like,
I'm gonna give this film a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. YMS. I wanted it to be timeless. I wanted it to be like where kids can come back and listen to these episodes and hear what we sounded like right before we blew up. Angel right now just wrapped up on a short. He has a short that he made for We Are Me Too, a part of their accelerator program.
I did.
He's got so many things going on. He's got this web series that he's trying to get up. It's so funny because when that web series happens and when people come back to listen to this, they're going to hear like, oh, that little web series. It's fucking like, they're going to be like, oh, I watched that shit, you know?
This is the beginning. I want to let everyone know where I'm at right now in this career. And I guess this is going to be for ourselves as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I did the American Weekend short a couple of months ago. I just wrapped a short film called Plans. I am in the works of creating a web series called The High Concept, and I'm about to do a music video with my homeboys, the Altins. Out to the Altins. Out to Jonathan Justin Jimenez. I don't think you're watching anymore, but
probably not.
Shouts out to you, bro. And then I don't know what else am I gonna do after this, but I will definitely let you know in future episodes.
Well, yeah, that's the thing though. Like, I wanted to track our because I want kids to come back and see like when we were just like right, like just the rumblings of like right before we're about to blow up. And I want that's why we're calling it Us. I mean, it's a show that stars you and me.
That's why it's called the Us Podcast.
It's for all of us. It's all of us, dude. Like, whenever people like say, Chris, like, dude, like you're fucking doing it. It's like, nah, bro. Like, it's not just me. It's us, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to kind of have a selfish view of like my success, like where I wanted to be like, oh, I want, you know, because you grow, I sort of blame it on like, you know, we grew up thinking like Quentin Tarantino's such a legend, he's such a brilliant, Stanley Kubrick, it's all just him. And I was like, I wanted to like live up to that, but I quickly realized that it's just like, it's not that, dude. It's like, it's fucking everybody. It's everybody. It's your crew, it's your friends, it's your family, it's people who support you, it's all of us. And so that's why I thought Us is just such a powerful thing. Like, it's all of us. We're all coming up together. And I think that's why it's important, I think, for kids to have something timeless that they can kind of check back to. Like, you know, like when we're fucking winning our second Oscars, they're like, hey, listen to the Us podcast. Like, right before.
You want
to
hear the first episode where they're talking about making music videos and web series
and short films and shit. Mm-hmm. Look at that.
Short films. But now you know where I'm at. Chris, what have you done in the past? What did you just finish on, and what are you looking forward to?
The last thing I did was a short called Barney. It was for Inner City Filmmakers. It's my graduating video. I'm very proud of that short. It's a great short.
Stop living in the past, bro.
No, the last thing I did, literally last thing I did was
Before you even answer,
sure.
When did you think your professional film career started? Would you say it was Bad Labor or before that?
No, dude, it was like right after ICF. Or actually, I want to say when I got to ICF, because I got paid for that kind of. Well, when I won the scholarship, I got $1,000. That's true. So technically, I'm like, it was ICF.
There you go.
And so that's why I say I've been doing this. Like, I've been in the biz for like 4 years.
The biz.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so last thing I did was a mini series called For Me Too, We Are Me Too, the pro. Shout out, We Are Me Too. Thank you so much. I love you.
Shout out.
It's a mini series called Instant Crush. It's 4 episodes, 10 minutes long. It's based off this feature that I wrote last year called Instant Crush. which I hope to get to make. I mean, the miniseries for me, it's kind of like I want it to be like the tester for the movie, because the movie is fun. It's like it's got so many wild characters, and it's just really beautiful. And anyway, it's the first romantic thing I've ever written.
Chris just showed me like about an hour ago a rough cut of episode one, so I'm not going to talk about it, but I saw it.
Yeah, he saw it. He hated it. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, very interesting. I'm just kidding.
Wow, they paid for this? Wow.
You're very lucky. This is really something.
You should really start lining up your next job fast.
and you made this? Oh, I can hear your brother's PlayStation.
I know. Look at that. Look how ghetto this setup is. Our mic, the recording mic, is sitting on my dirty laundry.
We do not have a studio. Not yet. His fucking brother's playing PS4 in the next room. We got a window open. We're in Southgate.
My dog is here.
The dog's been watching. We're on Instagram Live. What's up?
Anyway, that was the last thing I did. The thing I did before that was a music video for Black Mouth, called Nikki Yankee. And then the
who's
thing
in
I did
that? What's Black Mouth?
I'm glad you asked, Angel. That's my brother's band, Black Mouth. Revenant Gorillaz, their debut album is out now. It's fucking amazing. Hey. They're fucking groundbreaking. Their new album, dude. Like Brandon Carmona is the front man, and he's my brother. So I did that.
He's in the next room playing PS4.
He is. He's high as fuck.
I can kind of tell.
Yeah. And so. I think I burned him. I don't want my mom to listen to this. I'm not going to recommend this to my mom. Sorry, Brandon. I love you. So that's the last thing. That's the thing I did before that. And then the big thing is Bad Labor. That was my first feature. I made that in 2016 with my two buddies, Tony and Jose. Shouts out. Again,
shout out, Tony.
My genius boys.
Shout out, Jose.
We did that in 2016, and we were all 19 years old. And we made it for $700, and it's a full feature movie, 86 minutes.
It is.
And now it's going to play at the La Leaf Film Festival.
Yep, this is before the La Leaf screening.
Right, this is before the La Leaf screening. It's going to play June 21st at 10 p.m. And we're going to play the fucking Chinese theaters, dude. This fucking $700 sellout movie, sellout thriller.
By the time this comes out, I think you would have already screened
it. Yeah, probably, yeah.
Pretty wild.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
You know, when I was making this movie, I always had big dreams for it, especially after reading Rebel Without a Crew, which inspired me to make the movie. But I always just thought, like...
Shout out Robert Rodriguez.
Robert, you don't need shout-outs. but I always thought, like, I mean, I always had high hopes, and, like, I like to dream big. But to me, like, if I was thinking realistically, to me, I'm like, this movie is most likely going to premiere, like, at Edwards. And I'd want it to premiere there, because it's here, it's home, you know, like, everybody can come. It's not that far of a drive. And
La Pacific.
Right. I always knew it was going to be a cult classic, but to me, I was just like, I said, but like, you know, it probably won't do that. But now that we're going to fucking play at the Chinese theater, the biggest theater in Hollywood, it's just like,
it's wild.
I don't know, dude. I'm really grateful that this happened and that we get to, show our fucking little backyard movie there.
For a film made by 19-year-old kids.
Right.
From Southeast LA.
That's the weirdest thing.
To be shown at the Chinese theater.
And that's why I think at this point in my life, I've been getting a lot of love and stuff on Instagram. Like, people are sending me messages and stuff, and
I've noticed
people that to me means a lot, just because it's like I feel it happening. I feel like because the thing is, before, like, we didn't have really much to be, and I'm not the only one. That's what feels good about it, is that I don't have to feel like I have this weight of responsibility on me, because it's fucking me, it's you. It's a bunch of other, you know, creatives that I don't want to name, but you know, like that, just because it's us right now.
This is us, the podcast, Us Podcast.
Exactly. And I can feel the energy, but in a different way, because, you know, there's always kids saying like, oh, I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to be at the Oscars one day. But I feel like now when they say that to me, there's a little bit more of a reassurance, because now they'd be like, well, fucking Chris Carmona did it. Like, Chris did it. Like, mm-hmm. Why not? Like, Chris was like fucking terrible in school. It's like, and he's, you know.
And that's been, I like that you said that, because that's been my drive. And I spoke to you about it, how coming from this, like, city, it doesn't feel like you can make it, because no one's made it before you. What fucking chance do I have to succeed if everyone before me hasn't?
Right.
And so I think it is crucial for you to succeed, and I think it's crucial for me to succeed, and I think it's crucial for every creative, no matter if you're a filmmaker, musician, artist, whatever. I think it's crucial for people from, we can mainly speak from our area of Southeast LA, but I'm talking about any city, any country, any state where you feel like you're not being seen, and yeah. No one's seen you, and no one of worth has come from where you live. I think it's crucial for you to take that burden on and become that person that breaks through the wall and creates just a little crack for the future generations to be able to see through and be like, fuck, if that person did it, like you said, if Chris Carmona did it, then I can too. If Angel Salinas did it, I can too.
That's right.
And it's just shit like that. And I think we need that. And
we do, dude.
That sounds like a good place to take a break. So we'll be back real quick after this quick break, bro.
Goodbye.
We are back. Welcome back to the Us Podcast.
Us Podcast.
Podcast about us.
Us.
Who we are? My name's Angel Salinas.
I'm Chris Carmona.
And we are back. So, for this next part of the podcast, me and Chris want to continue everyone getting to know who we are by doing a little thing that I proposed us doing where we talk about five pieces of media that have inspired us as creatives. We're primarily movie folk, but yeah. I think we appreciate pretty good pieces of media from time to time, so yeah. We'll talk about that.
And we'll start with you. What's the first piece of media?
Yeah.
That media inspired you?
I will have to say the movie Clerks by Kevin Smith.
Nice.
That was the reason why, and I always talk about this, when anyone even asks me what my favorite movie is, I think I usually say Clerks. Because I think that was the first movie I saw where I can be like, I can make this. It looked like film was achievable by watching Clerks. And you might say it's because it looks cheap or whatever, but yeah. I felt like a normal dude just making a movie because he could and he wanted to and he did it. And so I saw that and I was like, fuck, man. I can do that shit too. All I gotta do is put in jokes that I think are funny, get all my friends to come hang out, find a place where I can film. Like Kevin Smith found his fucking convenience store that he worked at.
Yeah.
And it was just like, bring all these pieces of my life that already exist, just fucking bring them together and start filming them, and there you got a motherfucking movie. So that was the first, that's definitely like a piece that if it was missing from like my life, I would not be who I am today.
That's a really nice way to put that.
Shooting it back at you, yeah. Chris.
So I guess for me the biggest piece, I mean, if we're talking about movies that if they didn't exist, like kind of we wouldn't exist in a way, I guess for me it was, well, I already talked about Spider-Man, but I guess for me it was El Mariachi. And it's and just kind of going back to Robert's book, that book changed my life. That book is the reason why I made Bad Labor and why when I finished it, I think he concludes it with like, what are you doing still reading this? Go out there and make your movie. And I was just so fucking full of energy. I just got the book and I threw it at the wall. I'm like, fuck yes. I'm like,
let's fuck you, Robert. I will.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's funny. I read the book first and I had never seen the movie. And so I remember when I came home, I bought it. And when I watched it, I thought like, wow, this is pretty bad. Yeah. but why I liked it so much is just because like I knew what went behind every shot. I knew why the guitarist is like big, like little performance, why like everyone just like erupts and like they, even though it's like a soft song and everyone's like, yeah, like if he just played some, like I knew why those mistakes or like little like kind of like little quirks were in there. And so that's why I enjoyed it a lot more, because I understood like that, like, yeah, it's kind of, it's a little whack, but the story behind it was just so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that movie, I was just like, okay, I wanted, I know I can do something like this, but better. And I think I did that, you know, but I'm waiting. Like, to me, why that is so cool is because, like, for me, like, I feel like, and you know, this probably sounds arrogant, but whatever, like, to me, I feel like Bad Labor is like the worthy predecessor to El Mariachi. And for me, my biggest excitement in life is like, I want to see what's going to be the predecessor of Bad Labor. Like, what's going to be a movie that cost way less, mm-hmm. that just did way more?
What doors will Bad Labor open?
Exactly.
You know, because I mentioned this, how Kevin Smith wouldn't have made Clerks if it wasn't for Slacker.
Right.
And so it's imagine all the people that got inspired by Kevin Smith's Clerks. And it's like, and I'm one of those people. So I want to make the movie that fucking inspires the next person.
Right.
And the next person. And it's just about inspiring the next... It's about making it and inspiring the next generation.
I think that's why it's so important, like, why, like, movies aren't just movies. Like, movies can literally get you to, like, break up with somebody, eat a certain food, you know, or make a movie or make your own. And so that's why, like, you know, people like to kind of like dismiss them as like, ah, it's just a movie. And you can for some things, but I think it's got way more power than that. So mm-hmm. that's my first one. El Mariachi. Nice. Yours.
You mentioned
next piece of media.
El Mariachi, but I'm gonna count that as one, even though you said El Mariachi / Rebel Without a Crew.
Right.
So I'll count that as one.
Yeah, that's one. Sorry about that. One.
But it inspired me to think of a book that, a piece of, like, a book that inspired me. The first thing that comes to mind, which I think is always, like, the indicator that that's the one that you don't even think about and it pops up. It's a book I read in 9th or 10th grade. I'm pretty sure everyone knows it. It's called The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Mm.
I read that book, and I fucking fell in love with it. And I'm probably still in love with that book. And I love the movie, too. But I'm talking about the book right now. The book, I think, I don't know, spoke to me in a way that books hadn't spoken to me at the time. And I don't think have ever spoken to me afterwards.
Right.
Because the book is about a kid's transition from middle school to high school. But I was already in 10th grade. But I could still relate to a lot of the shit that he was going through. And for the first time when I was reading this book, it felt like someone was writing it for me. I wasn't necessarily going through the same problems as him, like a sister having an abortion and being in love with this girl, blah, blah, blah. Well, a little bit. But anyway, it just felt like, it felt like someone understood me. And it felt like this book was written for me. And it felt like I had read it at the right time. And it just felt like, just like fate, you know? I don't know if you ever encounter something and it's just like, it felt like it was meant to be. It felt like I was supposed to be here right now or whatever. And that book did that for me, because things before, I was either forced to read or something. There was just always a detachment for me with novels. And this was the first book I read that just, it felt like mine. It felt like, I was like, this is my book. And I always stuck with it. And I love it. And I met the, and then it became a movie that was directed by the author, and then I got to meet him and he signed my book, and I love him so much. Stephen Chomsky, shout out to you, bro.
That's cool, man.
And I love everything about the book and the movie and the story, and I hope I always will. And I think I read it in like one day. It was very short. I love it so much. Shooting it back to you, bro.
You mentioned books, so I will I'll throw in another book. The most recent book I read, I'm gonna feel whack because I don't really remember too much of the details. I just remember how it made me feel, was The Alchemist. I know it's kind of like a cliche, like
classic high school book.
Is it?
I think so.
I didn't read it then.
Oh, well, we late bloomer.
Yeah, very late bloomer. I don't know. The Alchemist was just, it came to me at the right time. Right now, I'm a newly single man, kind of. I got broken. Thanks. I got broken up with in January, and that was such an weird experience for me.
And it's June right now.
Yeah. So I read that book, I think like a month after it happened, and it just, or a month or two after it happened, and it just, like, it was the right thing I needed. And even though it's kind of the more recent of my influences, I owe a lot to that book, because it just reminded me that, like, heartbreak or failures or whatever, or however you want to call it, like, it's just a little moment in achieving your overall personal legend. What I didn't realize is that this breakup, you know, for permanence or temporary, it changed me. I believe, honestly, the reason I got to direct on Instant Crush as well as I did was because of this breakup. Because back then, I always had a horrible time directing, believe it or not. Like, I hated it. I preferred being in editing because I'm like, all right, at least I can control things here. And, like, I can just kind of manipulate the images to how I want. I always hated being on set, though, because it was just always me and Tony and Jose just doing all the work ourselves. And mm-hmm. and I the fault on my part was that I handled all of the responsibilities very, like, poorly. So, like, sometimes we'd just be like, we decorate the set on the day. And, like, we like stuff we should have done, like, 2 weeks ago, like, we're doing it on the day. And so that's why it was extra tiring. It was extra, like, tedious. And so the reason why I love The Alchemist is because it just showed me, hey, like, hey, man, like, chill. Like, chill, relax, and kind of opened me up to meditating. It opened me up to just being okay with the things that go wrong, because ultimately, in like a few days, a few months in advanced time, we're going to look back and be like, oh, that's why this was important. That's why this had to happen to me. And I really believe, I mean, I don't think I've received all the benefits of this breakup yet, but I feel like, you know, even now I can look back and be like, this breakup had to happen, because mm-hmm. now I approach directing much differently and I have fun with it now. I didn't used to have fun with it before, which is fucking gnarly. I hated making bad labor. Really? Naked Yankee was like, it was okay, but like it was still tiring. This one, I mean, you might say it was probably
easier. So why'd you keep doing it?
Because I love it. To me, I just thought, like, okay, it's just the pain that I love, I guess. You know, like, mm-hmm. I love, it's kind of like when, like, how, like, why do mothers have kids again? You know, it's like, I guess, it's like, it's like, it's not that bad of a pain, you know, like, once you get through, like, the final product is always fun.
And so that's a really good way to put it.
That's what I thought it was. And I
realized directing was just childbirth.
Exactly. It felt like that to me. And it's stressful, sure. I mean, I was definitely like stressed out a couple times in Instant Crush, but I had fun. I'm like, dude, we get to fucking just make stuff. So, like, I was chilling. I had a great time. But The Alchemist is really a big piece of why I got to be more just relaxed.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Never read it. I don't know if
it's
I want good. To.
Yeah, I don't know if it's for you, but I mean, you should definitely check it out.
I'll check it out. I was sitting here also thinking about what other piece of media, and I have to shout out a band that I think is really, I think is really close to home.
I'm gonna do a band too after you. Good.
Chris is copying me like always. JK, kind of. For me, it's this band called Modern Baseball. Shout out to Modern Baseball. I discovered them pretty late in the game, maybe like a year or two ago. They haven't been around for that long, but when I listened to their music, much like the other pieces of media, I felt an instant connection to them. Through the lyrics, through the music. It just felt like I knew these guys, and it felt like these guys knew me.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like these songs were written for me, by me, you know, starring me, whatever. It just felt like there was a connection there, and I hadn't felt like that with a band. I don't want to say ever, but I can't think of it right now. But yeah. This is the freshest way. Sorry, this is the most recent instance of that, where a band just felt like they got me, and yeah, they're fucking fantastic. They have 3 albums.
What's their biggest song? Because I never heard of one, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, they're kind of low. I mean, they're kind of low-key.
I see.
I'd say...
Modern Baseball?
Modern Baseball.
Okay, I gotta check them out.
There's a song called At Chloe. That's about Twitter.
I'll show you some. Oh, At Chloe. Okay, gotcha.
I'll show you some songs after is done. But yeah, Modern Baseball. Shouts out to them. I love you. And you've made my life better.
I will say a band too, because now I got me excited.
I feel like I know
it is. I think you know. The Strokes.
Yep.
The Strokes. Julian Casablancas. And I'll tell you why. I'll keep this brief. Me and my brother Brandon, I never hated him. I've always loved him. But we were like sworn enemies when we were growing up. We never related. We were the total opposite. He was skinny. I was chunky. He liked other things than I did, and like we were just literally like, even to this day, like we're like best friends, but sometimes like we'll disagree on so many other things, and it's always just jarring to me. Like, he'll be like, for example, I think it's really, no offense to anybody, I think it's really unattractive for girls to have braces. I don't like it.
I think it's unattractive for anyone to have braces.
But my brother disagrees. He's like, you don't like braces on a girl? I'm like, no. He's like, I think it's cute. I'm like, how? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, and he explained this to me. Anyway, the point is that me and Brandon, we never agreed on anything. Anything. And we, even when we liked the same bands, we'd always argue about like, well, who showed? I showed you them first. Like, so I liked them before you. It's like, no, like I showed them. But the first band that both of us ever agreed on and never fought about was The Strokes. And it was primarily Julian Casablancas, just because like we both just like it, it, you know, I, it was even the song Instant Crush, because we heard Julian on that Daft Punk, which I named the show and movie after. We heard Julian on that song, and Brandon told me, he's like, hey, you know, this is the singer of The Strokes. I'm like, oh dude, I've been listening to The Strokes. It was summer 2013. I was like, I've been listening to The Strokes, like, and really, me too. And so then we would just kind of like talk about it, and like, and then we'd like developed like this love for Julian Casablancas, and so that's why that happened. Yeah,
I remember talking to Brandon about The Strokes, and I was like, Come Down Machine is a fucking terrible album, and he's like, what?
I love Come Down Machine too. That was the first album we heard.
That album is, I would straight up say it, sucks dicks. And I talked to Brandon about it, and he was just like, he had a different experience because he, I think that was the first,
because that was the first Strokes album.
That
was
the first Strokes album, and so he went backwards in their
discography. Yeah, we went backwards. That's another thing too. Me and Brandon, we always find that like we always love the weirder albums that bands make, because we didn't grow up with them. We weren't allowed to. We were a Christian family, so we weren't
allowed to. Arctic Monkeys, Humbug Sucks, straight up.
That's a good album. But anyway, yeah, so it's The Strokes. It was The Strokes, Julian Casablancas. And like, I still love Julian to say, like, we've met him quite a few times. And even an Instant Crush. He's a good friend. He's a good pal. And even in Instant Crush, I got to throw in his new band, a Voids tee. One of the characters is wearing a Voids tee, and I'm so fucking proud of that.
I hope you don't get sued.
No, they said, I remember I checked with Me Too, they said like that it's cool. Because I made it a point to say, hey, I won't fight for much, but I really want this shirt in here. I'm like, can we make that happen? They're like, yeah, it should be no problem. Because the Voids, they're not like, it's not like they're Taylor Swift or nothing, you know?
True.
They're not really making that much money off of anything, so.
Nice. Shout out Julian
Casablancas. I think they're going to appreciate the... I think they'll appreciate the
shout out, the revenue from that shirt.
No, I think they'll appreciate the free publicity.
That's true.
So, anyway, love you, Julian.
All right. On to my number four. I'm going to have to go different again and pick a comic book that I think was a big part of who I am today. And I would have to say it was it's the last volume of Scott Pilgrim. It's called Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour. And the reason why I fucking love that that volume specifically is because this isn't the part of the story, spoilers for Scott Pilgrim upcoming, it's part of the story where Ramona has broken up with Scott and she went back to her ex-boyfriend Gideon, and Scott is just kind of in denial. He's just hanging out at home playing on his PSP, and everyone's like, hey Scott, you want to get up, you want to do something? He's like, no, I'm cool. I was like, are you doing okay with the breakup? He's like, yeah, whatever, you know, girls break up with me all the time, whatever, it's cool. He's just kind of in denial. And so the whole beginning of this volume, he's kind of like going back to his ex-girlfriends. He encounters his ex-girlfriend from the beginning of the story, Knives Chow, and he's like, you know what, me and you, like, that's what was meant to be. Like, I was supposed to always be with you. And then they, like, kiss for the first time, and it's super awkward. And then she's like, nah, dude, this isn't happening. And this whole time, he's being followed by Nega Scott, which is, like, this black and white version of Scott. But it's always in the background. And then Scott visits his ex-girlfriend. Oh, my God, I forgot her name.
It's okay.
Another ex-girlfriend. What's her name? Ivy? Evie? Envy.
Envy Adams.
He meets Envy Adams. And then the girl that broke his heart. And he tells her, like, don't you think that me and you are meant to be? Like, this was always meant to be, me and you. Like, we're destined for each other. Then she's like, nah, bro, that ship has set sail. And then finally, he gets to his bandmate, Kim. And he visits her. I think she's, like, up north in Canada. Like, a little more north in Canada. He goes to visit her. She's with her parents. And he goes, and they have this sweet moment, like, when they're just, like, overlooking a horizon. And then he kisses her. And then she's like, what are you doing? And then he's like, Kim, I've always known that you liked me. And I think this is what we're supposed to do. I think I'm supposed to be with you. And then she tells him, like, you ignore me all of high school. You ignore me, like, while we're in a band. and now all of a sudden you want to be with me, like, get the hell out of here. And so she leaves him, and he's left alone, and then this black and white version of Scott, Nega Scott, like, confronts him. And this version of him represents, like, all the negative shit that Scott has done in his past life that he's been running away from, and that he's been trying to ignore and avoid, because he himself has always thought of himself as this great person, this great guy, and that he's had no flaws. And all this, like, rejecting negativity has taken a physical form. And so when you expect that there's going to be, like, a epic battle between good and evil, instead, they both combine and they become one person. And they become the version of Scott Pilgrim that ultimately rescues Ramona and saves the day. And it was only when he combines his good and his negative qualities and learns to accept himself for the good and the bad is when he's strong enough to save the day.
Wow.
And I fucking read that shit, and it like spoke to me so much. Wow, at that point in time, that it's gonna stick with me for fucking ever. And that shit is beautiful. Go read the whole series if you have the chance. It's fucking beautiful. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, beautiful.
Wow.
Shooting it back to you, Chris. I think he needs to process that a little bit.
I do. All right, I have one, because I didn't grow up with comic books. I didn't have that luxury. I mean, I grew up reading them, but I didn't like
luxury.
It is a luxury, I think, because I wish I did. But I will say that I never thought of this before. But there's a big. It's kind of two people, but I grew up on YouTube. Before YouTube became cringy and just lame and just a fucking machine. But this is when, like, literally just, like, average people were just making stuff. And I will always give these two particular creators credit, because if it wasn't for them, I would not have picked up a camera and just started, like, just recording my stuff. So, two influences of mine. YouTube, I'll say, is one of the mediums that inspired me. But mm-hmm. two particular creators... Ryan Higa.
Dang.
Ryan Higa. How to be gangster videos, how to be ninja, all his webcam videos. That's
throwing it back.
Ryan Higa. I mean, he's still doing shit. He's, like, I watched it. I don't watch him, like, regularly, but, like, I watched him, like, this guy's still, he's still got it. That's he's still crazy. Sharp. I know he's got writers and stuff now, but he's still sharp.
That's, like, 10 years old.
Oh, I think more.
Yeah?
I think more, bro. That was, like, 2006, so, like, 12 years old. Anyway, so Ryan Higa, that's one. And there's another one, they're kind of lesser known, but they were really big because they had a very popular parody, and they're called Evil Iguana Productions. Evil Iguana had a very popular Dark Knight trailer parody, and that's, like, what, like, blew them up. And they did, like, a bunch of trailer parodies, but they also had, like, their own original content, like, where they, like, had their own show called The Alan and Craig Show that me and Brandon used to binge on.
That's cool.
And it was cool, dude. Like, if you look them up, their channel's still there, but they do other things now. I think they still go by Evil Iguana. So Evil Iguana, Craig Deering, Alan, I forgot your last name, but shout out.
For inspiring Chris Carmona.
Yeah, dude, because, like, they, I don't know what it was, like, they just, like, they made me want to go out and buy Final Cut Pro, because, like, we cut with Final Cut Pro, like, we do, like, these little, like, trailer, and, like, they built their own, they made their own costumes, and it's, like, Evil Iguana, I mean, Ryan Higa really got me to, like, want to do funny and just, like, videos in general. But Evil Iguana Productions, like, they were the group of just, like, these guys from Chicago that just, like, these made these little movies. And I remember I was so jealous of, like, the camera that they had. It was, like, a Sony HD handy camera or whatever. But it was, like, it looked so cool because it had, like, a little boom mic on it, you know?
Very professional.
Exactly. And so I met them. I got to meet them when they came to LA because they got invited to the MTV Movie Awards, like, when Twilight was popular, because they did a Twilight parody. Oh. And so they got invited to they were, like, popping for a little bit.
I've never heard of them. Sorry, that's, guys.
No, it's cool. And so I met them, and there's a video of me meeting them on my Evermore Productions channel, and you could see, like, little me and Brandon, like, kind of, like, starstruck by this guy, Craig. But that guy really inspired me, Craig Deering. I hope you listen to this. He really inspired me to just, like, He just made it seem like it was achievable. Not because he was Mexican, not because he was, you know, he's a skinny white guy from Chicago, but he had these friends that, like, just, like, he did these. I think it was particularly because, like, their videos, they looked like just a bunch of friends made them. And the fact that they were not only just friends making them, but that they were getting very popular because of it, like, that's what made me want to become a YouTuber, is because I can make these, like, cinematic quality videos. Like, they didn't just do, like, shitty, you know, cinnamon challenge or whatever. Like, they this was before all that. This
ice bucket challenge.
This is when they did, like, original programming. Like, they had their own show. They had, like, just these fucking awesome, hilarious skits, and, like, they were so innovative and very, very underappreciated. And so Evil Iguana, like, I think that's, like, again, that's why it's important for people. You have to kind of be, I think you, I'm going to get into a whole tangent here, but I just will say that I think it's important that whenever you put out a piece of media, don't think that it doesn't matter, because you don't know about that one kid. And you might be some group of Chicago kids making some silly videos and you think like, oh, this is not going to be helpful for college, but you have no idea that this is like inspiring a kid from Bell, California, that's watching you, and his vocal, but you can't see him because you have a shitload of fans, but who's watching, and he's like very loyal to what you're doing and will even want to imitate you and want to be you guys one day or whatever. Yeah. And like, you don't know that you're inspiring like the next big wave. So be mindful every time you make something, you're inspiring people. So Evil Iguana, hang on, I'm getting a call. Let me pause this real
quick. Let's pause. Hello. All right. And
we're back from that phone call.
A lot happened.
Swear to God, a lot. We just like, we took a phone call. A bunch of my girlfriends called me like, hey, come to this bar. We went. A bunch of crazy shit went down.
Crazy shit happened.
We came back and I'm like recovering from a bus. Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing good. This shit was crazy, but we got it. But we're back here, the same session, and it's about
three in the morning.
And let's finish this up. The last piece of media that kind of inspired us.
Yes.
And made us who we are.
Yes, sir.
I want to finish it off with, I would say, with a TV show, with a television show that I feel has influenced me a great deal. And that would have to be Seinfeld.
Ah.
Seinfeld is my number one, probably my favorite comedy ever. I don't think it's the funniest comedy ever, but I it's my number one because I've watched it so many times. It's influenced my comedy. It's influenced the way I think. It's been with me since I was a kid and well into adulthood. I have all the DVDs. I watched every season. Like once a year.
Ooh, you know what I should give you? I have a book of the Seinfeld scripts from the first two seasons.
I would love that.
You should read them.
That'd be dope. Yeah, and I think, I don't know, it means a lot to me just because of how long it's been in my life, and the fucking jokes make me laugh. Just, I can just remember a joke and then it'll make me laugh, and I'm like, that was really smart. I really like the writing. I really like the structure of the show.
Yeah.
And the older I get, the more I can see like the flaws in it and the stuff that I don't really like about it, because it was made in the 90s, so it's very it's kind of dated. And so I can see its flaws, but I think it's always going to be like a really, it's going to be has a special place in my heart. And so without Seinfeld, I don't think I would be who I am, for sure.
Nice. You know, I would want to say TV show too, but Seinfeld is actually one of them, and you kind of just perfectly captured that. So, I know I said El Mariachi, but that to me is like, it's a low budget movie. It's a different kind of class of movie. So I want to talk about a movie that has really influenced me. There's quite a few, but right now the one that I really want to highlight, just because I was just listening to the soundtrack today and it's just like, it just fucking reinvigorated me, was Good Time. And I have a poster of it right here in my room.
It's right next to me right now.
Yep. Signed by the two directors, Benny and Josh, who will shout be my Benny best friends soon.
Shout out Benny, shout out Josh.
So let me tell you why. My favorite movies of all time are a double bill of Wolf of Wall Street and Punch Drunk Love, and I have my reasons for that. We can get into it in another episode. But why Good Time means so much to me is because last year in August, I was here at home. I was just chilling, and I know I had seen, me and Brandon had seen the trailer for it, and we're like, ooh, Robert Pattinson is in an art movie. I'm like, that seems interesting. And I looked at my phone. I saw a review for Good Time, a video review, and then they're like, oh, it's really cool. I was like, all right. I'm like, I want to go see it. And so I saw there was one more screening at Edwards, this theater near my house. So I drove, and I was like, it's going to start in like 10 minutes, but I'm going to go fucking see it. I went. I was by myself at first. I'm like, all right, this is, you know, A24, people are never usually here, so I'm like, whatever. So I watched it, and dude, I was fucking just hooked. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just me and eventually a few other people came, and I got upset because I'm like, fuck, they're gonna ruin it. Because it's like, usually when it's just like you and another person, like, they kind of like a group of people, they kind of just like talk over because it's late and they don't give a fuck. But they were talking in the beginning, that's why I was just like, fuck, man, like, they're gonna ruin it. But then, like, when the opening is over and the music just kicks in, like, everybody was just like, shut up. Everybody just shut the fuck up. And they just watched everything that happened. And I just remember watching it, like, just like the whole, like, the soundtrack just really pulled me in. The way they shot it, Robert Pattinson was so fucking good. And then there was a point, I remember which point in the movie, because I was watching it, I'm like, this is good. Like, and then I'm like, this is really good. And then there's a point where Robert Pattinson and this other character, guy or buddy or whatever, they're going to this theme park to look for some acid. Mm-hmm. And then it's just the part after they jump over the fence, and then, like, they're walking, like, they're walking inside, and there's a song that goes, and I remember when that part happened, I was just sitting, and I swear to God, I said out loud, I was like, this is fucking awesome. And I was so happy that a movie like this existed. I'm like, I'm fucking in for this, yeah. Right? Like, wherever this goes, I'm fucking in. And I just remember having this, like, emotional experience, you know, with the end, when everything just, like, fucking, like, comes together, and just the music. I was like, what the fuck is this movie? And I remember when it ended, you know, the people in front of me, like, they left, and I just sat alone in the theater, and then, like, I listened to just that song that they play at the end, and I just, like, I didn't know how I felt about it, because I was very...
Yeah, that ending was... I didn't know how to feel about that ending.
You see,
either.
Because the movie is so intense and so fun, and then it ends very, like, somberly. Or not somberly, but it kind of leaves you... It makes you, like... It's a little thoughtful.
Unceremonious, almost.
Yeah, because it kind of... Because, like, you'd think a movie that would... like, directed by... But no, it just ends...
Like some fucking dope shit.
Right, but it just ends, like, with, like, this very, like... emotional moment, and the credits are just kind of rolling quietly over this song, and then it just ends.
And you're like, this is it. This is the end.
You're like, wow. Like, and I thought that was such a bold thing, because with...
they could have easily ended it.
Right.
Like, at his face.
Yeah.
Like, at his face. Yeah. Like, zooming in, and it's like, end. But it's like, no, dude, they gave us...
They gave us, like, a really somber epilogue that was just like, when I... That's why
I completely changed the movie.
Because, see, I would have left like, fuck yeah, good time. But when I left, I was just like, wow, fuck yeah, good time.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I learned from that movie, is that, like, you can have a fucking kick-ass movie, but you don't always have to end it with the ba-bang, you know? Because with Quentin, it's always like, ba-bang, or like, ha-ha, man.
This is my best movie ever.
Yeah. But then this one just kind of, it's a fucking, and then it just, like, it ends. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, just go home. And I went to go see that movie 8 times in total, and I have the stubs to prove it. And that's why I got my poster signed, because the Safdies were really impressed. Actually, hang on. I have a letter from them right here.
Well, I'm going to...
That sounded gross, I bet. That sounds gross.
Well, I'm going to talk about Good Time while Chris gets this letter. I thought it was really good. No, I'm just kidding. I thought that ending, it, like, reminded me that the whole movie was pretty much about the brother. Like, everything this dude did
was for him.
And to see him at the end, and seeing, like, for me, the ending was like, the brother's better off without him.
Yeah.
Like, he was just bad for his brother.
Yeah.
And so that's what that ending felt like to me.
Well, I after I saw the movie, I had just such a powerful experience with it. I had to write the Safdie brothers on Twitter, and they thankfully responded back to me, and we had, like, a bunch of back and forth. When we went to New York last year, we saw it in 35mm film, which is, I don't know how, but it was even better than the first time I saw it, just because, like, you could just feel the texture of film, and the grain was real, and it was just beautiful. And when I told him I saw it 8 times, like, hey, yo, send us a poster or whatever, and we'll sign it for you. That's how fucking New York they are. They didn't give me a poster. They said, buy a poster,
send it to us,
and we'll fucking sign it. I don't know. I love that. Anyway, so they wrote to me and my brother, because I wrote them a letter, and they said, here it goes. It goes, Chris and Brandon, thank you for your kind words and for seeing Good Time 8 times. There must be some type of refund in place. I have seen 0 movie 8 times in a theater. Thank you from our souls. And this is a part of the letter that I've been trying to, like, figure out what it means, and I have an idea, but I'm just curious what you think. Fight harder. This is what they wrote. Fight harder than anyone else while listening to their screams. Be obsessive. All our best, Josh and Benny, New York, New York, 11/02/2017.
Hmm.
I think I don't know.
What do you think it means? And then I'll tell you what I think it means. Fight harder than anyone
else while listening to their screams. I think, to me, I had a different idea of what I thought it meant when I first read it. But I think, to me, kind of what it means to me now, I could be wrong, but it means, like, you know, fight for what you want, but don't, like, ignore people around you. Like, kind of, like, listen to them. Like, because everybody's got something to say, even people that you hate. Like, people that you dislike, they all have their reasons. So just acknowledge that, but also be, like, obsessive with what you do. And that part struck, because they underline that, be obsessive. And so, to me, I'm like, all right, I get that, but, like, fight harder than anyone else while listening to your screams. Like, I wonder why they wrote that to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't, that, more than the phrase itself, like, I wonder why they felt compelled to write that to me. I guess because I knew I was a filmmaker and, like, that I made probably my first movie. But, that's what it meant to me, yeah.
I was going to say something similar. I think it's like, You nailed it when you said, like, don't ignore the people that you're fighting against, I guess. And I think fighting in general, meaning like your peers and your colleagues, like even like me and you, we're filmmakers, but we're kind of in competition with each other. Like, we're both right. kind of trying to break through. We're kind of going to the same places. And even though I don't see you as a rival or anything like that, no. I think just in general, because we're both filmmakers, it's like we're going to be pitted against each other. There might be projects that we're both trying to get and only one of us can get. So it's like the difference is, will we kind of destroy the other person, or will we fight but listen to each other as well? It's yeah. like it's almost like a beautiful like battle dance. I don't know.
Yeah.
Some shit like that. I think
it's great. Yeah. And that's why I love this Apti so much, because to me, and this is why I've been very gracious with people that I don't call them my fans, but just like people that like are supporting me, that are from my community. What these guys showed me is that you could make a fucking kick-ass movie. You could have so much fucking talent, but you're never too good to write back to people who appreciate you. And that's the thing that
Yeah, Steven Spielberg. I'm just kidding.
No, that's the thing that always bothered me about people in our area, is that like a mutual filmmaker that we know, he was someone that I really admired. And instead of like kind of appreciate that he had that kind of admiration for me, even though I technically have accomplished more than he has at a young age, I'm just saying, to me, it was messed up that he like looked at that as a way to see me as less, and then just kind of like betray me on that. And it was just it was a very disappointing experience. And I never ever want to do that to someone who says that they look up to me, because I think that that's very...
He didn't listen to your screams.
He didn't.
That was a thing.
And I think that's why like I don't like care for his opinion anymore. And which sucks, because I really do admire his film. But anyway, we're getting to the whole thing. But I'm saying like for me, I wanna aim to be more like the Safdies. That's just my point. Like, I want to just like write a letter to just some kid that just fucking wants to go see your movie 8 times. That's
awesome. I don't like people that get too wrapped up in who and like the fame that they get that they have no time for.
Yeah.
Just somebody, you know? But yeah, I think that's going to be one of our goals as filmmakers. And we're going to wrap this first episode off. Wow.
This is an hour and a half.
Yeah. You guys got a good little window into who we are. Maybe a little too much sometimes, but I promise there will be more to come.
Way more.
Check out our next episode when it's up, and it's going to be dope.
And feel free to like write to us, just ask us like questions, and we'd love to answer some. I'd love to answer some questions.
Follow us on Instagram, either our personal Instagram, or I feel like we'll already have an Instagram for this podcast.
We have yet to make one. If we do, we'll definitely throw it at the end.
It's going to be on there. It's going to be in the description, whatever. We don't really know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen. And by episode 2, we're going to have this shit planned out. I promise. But for now, we'll see you next time. This has been the first episode of the Us Podcast with Chris Podcast. Carmona and Angel Salinas. And
it's all of us, bro.
We are out of here. Goodbye. See ya. Hey everyone, that was another episode of the Us Podcast. Make sure you catch us on our social medias. I am at Los Angel I Salinas on Instagram.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at the Chris Carmona.
Make sure you follow us on social media.
No! It's okay. We'll
make sure you follow the podcast on Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. Write us a review. Say some nice things. Say some maybe not so nice things. Go ahead and tell us.
Please.
All right. Bye.
That sounded pretty good.